I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, female athletes call out Washington's elected leaders as gutless autocrats. Meanwhile, the teachers' union spreads lies about the efforts to protect girls' sports. And the head of Seattle's police union joins us to react to the election of a socialist mayor who was once, at least, a police abolitionist. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, 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 and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Welcome to this Monday, a little show prep for the week. We won't have a show on Thursday, Thanksgiving, but we will have shows today, obviously, tomorrow and Wednesday. So just to keep you up to date on some housekeeping, we had a wonderful turnout this weekend at an event for Let's Go Washington that I spoke at Cougar Mountain Middle School in Issaquah. And of course, this has to do with the two initiatives to protect girls' sports, one to protect girls' sports, one to protect parental rights. And we were fortunate enough to have two teen athletes in Washington State join us at the event, Annalie Wilson and Frances Stout. And I was so happy to see so many adults come to stand up for these girls as they stand up for themselves. And this has been a difficult thing for them to do. You know, they have, in Annalie's case, she started speaking out after she lost a state track meet to a biological boy. And in the case of Frances Stout, both of these girls we've had on the show, she started speaking out after she decided to sit out her final basketball game of the year earlier this year because she saw a biological boy playing on the other team. And she had told herself if that ever happens, she wasn't going to play, and she didn't play. So they've both spoken out. And I will say the vile nastiness directed toward them online after our event on Sunday is just disgusting. Adults, absolutely unbelievable. But these two girls, man, I was so proud of them. It's like they're my own kids. They're not, of course, but, you know, I was just so proud of them. I wanted to play a couple clips from their remarks over the weekend. This from Annalie.
I've continued to speak out because I know how it feels to have something you earned taken away. I am not alone. Girls across Washington have messaged me. Girls who are discouraged, hurt, and scared to speak up publicly. They've told me they've lost podium spots, awards, rankings, and they've told me that if they protest, even by peacefully refusing to compete, they're threatened with suspension by their schools, coaches, or athletic directors. As female athletes, we feel like our hands are tied and our voices are ignored. We feel like we do not matter at all. Our fairness and safety are being dismissed by adults who are supposed to protect us. So today I want to speak directly to Governor Bob Ferguson, Superintendent Chris Reichdahl, and the WIAA. We are asking that you listen to the female athletes in Washington who are being directly affected by your policy allowing biological boys to compete in girls' sports and be in our locker rooms. You have stood up for transgender athletes, but you have not stood up for us. We matter too. We have voices and we have stories, and we deserve protection in our locker rooms, in our sports, and in the opportunities that we have worked so hard for. Governor Ferguson recently said, Washington is the best state for women's sports in the country. Funny. I was shocked that he could say that with a straight face. Has he not read the letters that we've written, the stories we've shared, the pleas from girls who just want a fair chance? Governor Bob Ferguson, Washington is not the best state for women's sports, and it won't be until every girl knows that when she steps on that starting line, that field, or that court, she's competing on a level playing field.
Amen. I love it. And, you know, one of the things I think is so important about the way that both of these girls have approached this issue is they're not targeting trans athletes. They understand that this is an issue that has been brought about by poor decisions of adults. And I will say, it warmed my heart a little bit to see both of them, both 16 years old, speak directly to Bob Ferguson and Chris Reichdahl and Nick Brown. Here's part of Frances's remarks.
Governor Ferguson, Chris Reichdahl, and Nick Brown, we see right through you.
Hell yeah,
and what we
do.
See is gutless men trying to stifle the voices of young women. I may be 16 years old, but I have way more guts than you'll ever have.
Yes, girl, yes.
We're not gonna stand for it anymore. I'm calling your bluff, and I'm exposing the lies that you tell over and over, and I refuse to share my locker room with the boys and men or be kicked out or punished for doing so. I will not be stopped, and what you've done to me is wrong. I'm calling on President Trump to please take note about what is going on in Washington State. We need you, President Trump, to please put these out-of-touch politicians in their place and stop this nonsense. I won't stop. I won't stop, and I'm asking everyone listening to fight with me. Fight, fight, fight. We will not stand down.
A standing ovation from the crowd for both of those young women, which I just love to see. And they're so brave for doing that. And I think, especially in the face of, again, adults that are standing against them. Adults that are standing against them. And it bothers me the most, and I know that Francis called them gutless men. Love that. Referring to Bob Ferguson and Chris Reichdahl and Nick Brown. And I do agree that men have a place in this to stand up for women, but it does bother me more to see, especially outside. I'll play the clip in a moment. There were protesters at the event outside. And it almost bothers me more to see the adult women standing against these young girls and out there suggesting that these young girls and protecting their right to fair play, you know, is somehow bad, I mean, and hateful. It's just the craziest thing. So keep in mind, this wasn't just about protecting girls' sports. Of course, you have the parental rights side of this. And we knew there were going to be protesters there on Sunday. I got word based on some of the video that some of those protesters you're about to see are teachers in the school district. So you've got teachers out there and members of the union and members of the 5th district, legislative district Democrats, who are out there standing against these teen girls and standing against the rights of parents to know what's happening with their kids at school. Our friend Jonathan Cho was there covering it and talked to the protesters outside.
I was told by the people inside that if you signed these, that parents would actually get their rights back so they could have more access to information for their kids and so on and so forth.
I think you should read it. I've read the entire initiative, and it shows what the original text is and what the new text is.
So what's problematic?
They are very deceptively worded, and they actually take away a lot of rights from students.
Transphobes are weird.
Pretty weird.
Who are you guys calling transphobes?
I'm not going to talk to you, John.
Are you a professional activist?
He's just a plant.
We all have a right to be here.
Yeah, we do. Hey, I just want to talk to a council member.
No, thank you.
Ma'am, I'm just curious why you're standing out here as an elected official.
You're
just
making
me uncomfortable. You're
pushing
okay,
me.
Okay, I'll step back. Yeah, tell me why you're here today.
You know why I'm here today, so.
Why? Well, I want you to explain it to me so I can understand, so that we can mend the divide in this country that's happening.
Yeah, so standing out there, teachers, union members, Democrats, and spreading misinformation. I mean, the two initiatives are very simple. And of course, you can go to letsgowa.com if you haven't signed them yet. You can get one mailed right to you. But the two initiatives are very straightforward. One is a repeat of an initiative that was passed by the legislature and then that they came back and upended. So we already know what it's about. It's like, hey, you send your kids to a public school and the public school can't keep secrets from you about your kids. Wow, that is some controversial stuff. And yes, if your kid goes to school and is indoctrinated into believing that they're a boy or a girl, then, and the school wants to call them by a different name and gender at school, you can't then hide that from the parents. That's a very strange thing to hide from the parents. But the lies about this are outrageous. So there's this group called WA Families for Freedom, which is such a stupid name because they're, you know what they're trying to do. They're trying to, it's a misdirection. They are not for freedom. They want to control your kids. But this is the organization that's been put together to try to oppose the initiatives, and it's supported by the big unions and the who's who of left, you know, far left progressive activists. They are quite literally painting people who support these initiatives as pedophiles. Like, they're painting us as sickos who, in the case of keeping boys out of girls' sports, want to look at the genitals of children to figure out if they're a boy or a girl. So they have this, it says, oppose dangerous initiatives. And it has invasive genital exams. Girls as young as 11 could be forced into invasive physical exams of their reproductive organs if they want to play on an after-school team, violating their privacy and increasing chances for abuse. Wow, where do I even start there? Put a pin in that for a second. And then it says boys are exempt. No, no, boys are not exempt. They just don't consider boys who identify as girls, girls. Do you see what they're doing there? They say boys are exempt. No, no, the boys who want to play on girls' teams, that's who this is for. And those boys will have to have a doctor say, yes, I'm a biological girl, in order to play on the girls' team, which they won't be able to do because that doctor would be lying on a document. And then they say, when it comes to parental rights, that it's forced outing. Teachers and school counselors would be required to out LGBTQ plus students to unsupportive families, putting kids at greater risk of abuse, mental health issues, and even homelessness. Again, they believe they can parent better than you can. They believe that they can be entrusted with the secrets that kids have, but parents don't have a right to know what's happening with their children. And we already have laws around abuse, of course. If you are abusing, physically abusing your child, there's already laws around that. And then it says that these laws would restrict access to help. Students would have a harder time getting help from school counselors for domestic violence and sexual abuse at home. No, they wouldn't. There's literally nothing in the law whatsoever or in the initiatives that would make it harder for a kid to get help for sexual abuse or domestic violence. Makes no sense. But really quickly, because this is this central argument that they're going to try to make to lie to voters, because this isn't going to, I don't think these initiatives will, I think they'll bypass the legislature. I don't believe that Democrats in the legislature are going to be willing to pass these initiatives into law. So what happens then? Well, they'll end up on the ballot for voters in the midterms, so next November. And so this is really a preview of the lies that they're going to tell in the lead up to that election. And that's going to be the big one, is girls as young as 11 could be forced into invasive physical exams of their reproductive organs, increasing chances for abuse. Like, this is such a disgusting lie. And just for the record, it just so happens that on Sundays with Subscribers this coming week, we have a Spokane pediatrician on the show. We've already taped the interview, and we asked Dr. Erica Lee specifically about this argument, this issue. Like, if this initiative passes, is this going to subject kids and teens to invasive physical exams that they're not already getting? Here's what she said.
All adolescents should be monitored for how they go through puberty to make sure that their hormone system is working correctly and they're going to grow and develop normally and go through puberty appropriately. So it is completely routine for every developing adolescent to have a genital exam.
They're already getting them. This is already, unless you've never taken your child to a doctor, they're already getting this. They already have physicals. And in Washington State, you already have to undergo a physical in order to participate in athletics. So this is nothing above and beyond what a regular visit to the pediatrician would look like for a kid. And then the doctor just has to attest to, if your child has been going to see a pediatrician, which we hope at some point you've taken your child to the doctor, right? If they've done that, your doctor, their pediatrician already knows what their gender is. They know if they're a biological boy or a biological girl. And they just have to attest to it as part of the physical process for participating in athletics in school. So this is just a total lie. It's a total distraction, because they need to find a way to take probably a 90-10 issue and turn the public against it. So all they have on their side are lies. Oh, they're going to out kids. Oh my God, they're going to have genital exams. It's like, okay, well, you know, if you're against genital exams for minors, then you probably should never bring your child to a pediatrician, because they're already getting genital exams when they go to take their yearly physical exam. So it's just absolutely disingenuous, but so proud of those young women for standing up for themselves. We'll be posting their full remarks. And thank you to everyone who showed up on Sunday, who has signed the initiative. And please go to letsgowa.com for both the initiatives. And you can get one sent right to your door if you haven't already, because the clock is ticking on those. All right, speaking of initiatives. So, you know, last week, conservative activist Scott Pressler was crisscrossing Washington State. He was all over the place. Had a final event that happened in Kent that I went to, and the crowd was just super jazzed to see him there. Great turnout. All week, by the way, they had some of these events in the middle of the day. I think one was in the afternoon on a Monday. Hundreds of people showed up. There were hundreds, if not 1,000 people at the event that we were at in Kent with Scott Pressler. And of course, he is here on the ground supporting IL-26-126. That is the Proof of Citizenship Initiative that is being pushed by the Washington State Republican Party. And that's out there for you to sign. You can find information about it on the State Republican Party website. But really, Scott has been doing this in other places across the country, for instance, in Pennsylvania. He is so good at getting out the vote, getting people involved. He is widely credited with helping President Donald Trump secure Pennsylvania in the 2024 presidential election by getting Republicans or conservatives registered to vote as Republicans. And so he brought those talents to Washington State, crisscrossed the state to get out the word about this initiative. And before he went to his event in Kent on Thursday, he stopped by Undivided and joined me for a conversation about, you know, getting involved and getting civically engaged, but also about why this specific initiative to require proof of citizenship in order to vote is so important.
So we know Fergus isn't going to do anything. Mm-hmm. Olympia is not going to do anything. Lawmakers are not going to push election integrity and come to the table. We know that for a fact.
Yeah.
What I'm offering is these ballot initiatives, which you just got four of them passed in this last election in 2024. You've already shown you can do it. Is I'm offering bypassing Congress and bypassing your state legislature and forcing it on the ballot. And all these beautiful listeners at home have to do is help collect signatures.
Yeah. And does that, because I haven't seen any numbers that would suggest to me, because they don't, I mean, we don't know, right? We don't know how many people are not allowed to vote that are voting. We actually don't know the number. And so we don't know if it's a number big enough to make any sort of difference in Washington State. But is the idea that this is an issue, if put on the ballot, will pass, but also spur turnout?
In my humble opinion, from traveling across 40 states, mm-hmm. as I've mentioned, listening to the voters that voters care about, yeah. listening to the values that voters care about,
yeah.
election integrity yeah. is one of the most important things.
Yeah.
And yes, I do believe it will have a duality effect. It will not only increase the election integrity in itself, but again, it will provide confidence that those low propensity voters that don't vote mm-hmm. will actually drop off their mail-in ballot having some iota, some semblance of, okay, in this election, I feel better about doing this because we finally are going to be getting election security.
Yeah, so that's Scott Pressler. You can watch our full conversation with Scott on Sundays with Subscribers, aired yesterday. If you are not a subscriber, you can sign up on UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com, click on the banner that says support the show, and then you can check out that Scott interview while you're there. So we're really shaping up to have an interesting 2026. I think the likelihood of what's going to happen is those three initiatives will get enough signatures to qualify. I do not believe the legislature will take them up. You really think Democrats are going to vote? I don't, for some of them, especially in districts where maybe they're not safe, although a lot of the Democrats could take any vote in the world and they'd still get elected, they'd still get reelected. But I think that just based on the nature of these issues, they'll probably bypass them, send them to voters. So on the midterm ballot next year in Washington State, we could have, in addition to some heated congressional races, we could have protecting girl sports, protecting parental rights, and requiring proof of citizenship in order to vote. To me, those things are across party lines, very popular concepts. The polling proves that. The question is the depths to which Democrats are going to lie in order to try to change the results and the outcome. So we'll keep an eye on all of those. All right, coming up next, we have an interview with the head of the Seattle Police Officers Guild, the president of the police union, to talk about the election of a socialist and what it's going to mean for the rank and file of the Seattle Police Department. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Carlos M. Relied on Wes when it came time to sell his home, and he said this: selling property is stressful, especially in a volatile market, but but we never doubted our decision to sell with Wes. He understood our needs, knew the market, and had a recipe for success. With an out-of-state move and needed repairs, we had to rely completely on someone we trusted, and Wes and his team handled everything. Ebby kept us constantly informed and made sure nothing was missed. From repairs to staging, showings, negotiations, and closing, all was done with care and precision. We sold quickly and for top dollar. If you want a dedicated, experienced team that goes above and beyond, sell with Wes. 5 stars, couldn't agree more. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, quickly, before we get to the interview with Mike Solon of the Seattle Police Union, I want to follow up on a story that we discussed last week. So we are racing toward January 1st, 2026, when the new law kicks in that pays people to go on strike. Oh, yes. Gives unemployment benefits to striking workers. A concept so fringe that even Gavin Newsom vetoed a bill like this in California. But we just had to be crazier than California. So those Starbucks baristas who are on the picket line, I'm sure they'll hold out until they can collect unemployment benefits starting the first of the year. And we warned, we warned that if they pass this, it was really meant as a gift, first and foremost, to SEIU and the Washington Education Association, some of the biggest donors and backers of Democrat campaigns. Their money keeps them in office. This was a gift back to them of unemployment insurance. And we said, as soon as this passes, as soon as it becomes law, you're going to see strikes. And then some people were saying, well, Brandy, it goes into effect January 1st, which is the middle of the year. So we'll probably won't see teachers start to strike and use this until, you know, the 2026 school year begins. And I said, nah, I don't think so. And what's happening? Well, the Moses Lake Education Association, the teachers union in Moses Lake, is already planning a mid-year strike. They've been talking about it right now, floating the idea of potentially striking in the middle of the year. And I said last week, why the hell are you thinking you're talking about that right now? That's not an accident. It's because they're gearing up. You know, they'll get their nice little holiday pay and holiday off because the students already get it off. And then what are they going to do? They're not coming. You think they're coming back to school? Hell no. They're going to be on the picket line in January. And they're going to be collecting 6 weeks of unemployment benefits. And keep in mind, the law also states that, so you and I, if we suddenly find ourselves unemployed, we have to prove that we're looking for work in order to continue to receive unemployment benefits. The teachers don't. That is specifically in the new law, that if you're on the picket line, you don't have to have that requirement fulfilled. You just get to picket. 6 weeks. Unemployment benefits. Ridiculous. Well, the Moses Lake School Board is, I think, trying to show that they're not messing around here. And they're going to be pissed off if teachers disrupt the school year in the middle of the school year after a long extended holiday break. So they passed a resolution Thursday. It happened after our show, that is authorizing the district to hire temporary replacements and freeze health insurance for any participants. And they also say that any sick leave would require a doctor's note. So if anybody wants to, like, say, well, we're not going to strike, quote unquote, we're all just going to have a mass sick out or whatever it is because we don't want to lose our health insurance benefits. Well, they're saying, well, you're going to have a doctor's note and a doctor's going to have to lie for you if that's really the case. And so there's a couple things. Obviously, there are protections in place for striking workers and, you know, a lot of protections that are built into contracts for striking teachers. So you can replace them. But that doesn't mean you can fire them. And so basically what'll happen is they can hire temporary replacements to keep the school year going. And that's what they say that they're going to do. And then though, when teachers are no longer on strike, they have to give them their jobs back. So that is part of the law. But I think what the school is setting themselves up for here, and it's very smart of the Moses Lake School Board, is to say, we're going to try to minimize the impacts to an extent where we have some leverage. Because if we have replacements already in place and ready, and they go on strike, well, you know what? There's not this emergency situation to give them everything they need and get them back in the classrooms. Because the law that gives them unemployment benefits takes a lot of leverage away from school districts. Because if you're not suffering a financial, if you're not paying a financial price for being on strike, of course, what motivation do you have to come back to the bargaining table? Well, hopefully they get enough replacements where they can keep the school year going. They're going to pull health insurance. So there's some steps they can take to make it painful for these teachers if they want to strike in the middle of the school year. Just so happens that they're going to coordinate that with the new law giving them unemployment benefits. I say throw the book at them. I wish you could just fire them. I know, I'm very anti-union over here, and I'm about to speak to the president of the Seattle Police Union. I support certain unions. I don't support unions holding important institutions like public education hostage, and the teachers' unions in our state just have way too much power. So we have our eyes on what's happening in Moses Lake. All right. On the show last week, we talked about the fact that the city of Seattle is now acknowledging, and they did in a document, but it's been released. Our friend Ari Hoffman got his numbers on it, that the city is finally acknowledging just how bad their staffing crisis is with police officers. They've lost over 700 officers since 2019. Of course, a lot of those fled during the Summer of Love and the defunding movement. There's only 913 police officers available for deployment in the city. They should have probably closer to 1,500. This is the lowest number of in-service officers since 1991. And of course, the city has grown exponentially since 1991, but we still have the same number of officers. So the question is all of that about to get even worse? The city just elected a socialist mayor, Katie Wilson, and not only is she a socialist, she's a police abolitionist. She's on the record a couple years ago saying we had to have a future without the Seattle Police Department. So I'm sorry, if I'm a cop in Seattle, I'm already dealing with a crappy political environment. Why am I going to work for a socialist? There's all these agencies around the state that are offering massive lateral bonuses. You can get like $35,000 as a qualified officer to lateral to a different agency. So the question is, are we about to see our public safety crisis get even worse? We asked Mike Solon, president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild, to join us on the show today to talk about it. First, let me just ask, have you spoken to Katie Wilson?
Post-election victory? No. I've been waiting for the attention to subside and then send communique. So just to congratulate her for her win. But before the election, yes, I have spoken with her.
Okay. Are you willing to characterize whether you found it a productive conversation?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my role as the SPOG president is, regardless of political affiliations or whatever, I have to play the game, if you will, not trying to be flippant, but that's what it is. And I have to have relations, with either candidate to make sure that if they win, SPOG can get off to a reasonable footing before it goes more positive or before it goes negative.
Yeah, I think people understand and appreciate the political nature of the job that you have to do. But at the same time, this is someone who not too long ago didn't just support police defunding. She supported police abolition. She said we need to move forward to a future without the Seattle Police Department. So how do you really work with someone who believes that your job and the jobs of your rank and file shouldn't exist?
Yeah, I don't believe that's her current position.
Convenient,
of course. And I think some people that had that takeaway, I'm not speaking for them, but I think that that is obviously misguided. It might sound like a good soundbite to some of their radical supporters, but that's not mainstream yet. And I'd be shocked if she publicly said that. Now, we'll see what her cabinet looks like in terms of people that are of influence and where they drive the bus in terms of policy. And if they start going down a path that is reflective of an abolitionist mindset, then we're going to go scorched earth.
Yeah, and that's what I struggle with, is I'm always open to having people change their mind. I think we have to allow people the grace to be able to come to a different position and change their mind. But that is such, I'm sorry, but an asinine, otherworldly belief that we can do without a police department. And it's only 5 years ago. So I really struggle with, is that just, oh, I'm coming, you know, I have a new position just because I'm running for office. So how do you really tell whether she's come off of that position or was just doing it for a campaign?
Well, first of all, having that kind of position is just dangerous in general.
Yeah.
And it's so appallingly absurd that I try not to even put stock to it. But how do they come off it? I think it's going to be reflective of who is in her cabinet. And again, I double back to what are their policies going to be. And the main evidence of their movement back to abolition is what they're going to do with the money, meaning where that money lands in terms of what activists have they put on the payroll. And I equate it to what grift is going to become apparent, and who are the people that are taking that money. And then more importantly, what kind of return are you getting on that product? And time and time again, as we saw in King County, that, you know, you got a billion and a half that has just gone nowhere, or these NGOs that just swallow up the money and the community is like left holding the bag. So we'll see what happens in her cabinet. I, at least from the start, I have to remain optimistic, but I'm not a fool. I understand the price that an abolitionist mindset can put on to the constituents in this community. Yeah. At the end of the day, Brandy, you know, your show is The Undivided. And to me, it's what they're doing. If it's going to be negative, it'll be the divided Seattle once again. So I hope we don't go down that path.
At the same time, there is, I mean, how does your rank and file feel about it? Because this is, again, someone who held that belief. You've already been hemorrhaging officers. And I know the city, and maybe you want to comment on this too, they're acting like, you know, oh, our, you know, we're on a good trajectory, which we might be, but we still are like 700 officers short. So are you worried about losing officers just because they do not want to work for a socialist?
For sure. Yeah, I mean, that's real. First of all, socialism's never worked anywhere. Yeah. And I think it's a feel-good emotional mindset where, you know, who wouldn't want free money? But at some point, money is going to dry up. Mm-hmm. And who is holding the bag? Well, it's going to be the community, and you're not going to have enough cops because there's not going to be enough money to entice cops to want to be here. Right now, Brandy, we've done an effective job at the bargaining table to try to prop up at least the appearance, the financial earnings of cops in this city and the benefits, but that's really the only thing that's left. Then once you start drying up small businesses and then that tax base falls off, then, you know, the big corporations are left and then they'll start leaving. And then it's just this march to decay.
Yeah.
And that's a big concern for the cops that are here. And we've got an aging police department. There's close to 200 cops that are eligible to retire right now, and you're looking at one. And some of the feedback I get is people are really worried that we're going backwards to the 2020 catastrophe that it was. And I've seen firsthand some of those people that had the hands on the pulse of the defund movement. I've seen in and around the city hall buildings that to me caused great concern.
I am worried about, I've talked about on my show, and if you can feel free to disagree, I'm worried about the wokeification of police departments. Let me explain by what I mean by that. We had this sort of mentality in 2020, you know, and then they set out to pursue and recruit based off that mentality. That's my position, is that they wanted people who, quote unquote, fit the communities they serve. But I really feel like they wanted people that fit an ideological makeup that they thought would be more progressive. Is the Seattle Police Department being wokeified through recruitment strategy?
Well, you cannot brush aside the incessant drumbeat talking point of change the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And we've heard that since, what, 2012?
Mm-hmm.
More so 2017 and beyond. You know, issue of 9940, the problem is the police department's changed the culture. I am worried, Seattle specifically, of some people that who would not necessarily have qualified to be police officers, say 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
are now looking to become police officers and going through the background process. I can tell you that the background detectives are doing fantastic work, but there is some concern that people that wouldn't necessarily have met the cut 10 years ago are now getting out into the on the team. And we've got to just, this could be a disaster in the coming years, which then plays into the activist talking points about how bad the culture is. False narrative from these activists, but rest assured, Spog's got our finger on the pulse, and any type of wokeification, if you will, if that's a term, or indoctrination before they become sworn people, rest assured, Spog steps in and we try to right the ship. And my last point on that, Brandy, and you're so right to have some concern. Even if somebody gets through and somehow is the indoctrinated, socialist, they would be hard pressed to continue with that mindset, say 5 years into the job, because what they see and witness on the street really glorifies how socialist policies are a disaster.
Yeah. it's such a good point, because you can, you know, all we can believe all the police are the enemy and they're the bad guys and they're racist and all these things. Well, then you get a crackhead running at you with a knife and you have to shoot him. And you're like, well, I guess, you know, maybe I had to experience it to understand what they go through. But, you know, one thing that really quickly also bothers me, and I'll just say, and this isn't about politics for me, by the way, I don't need like the entire police force to be conservatives, but to me, in Washington State and places like Oregon, one of the only institutions of government left that has been able to rise above partisan political talking points is the police force, right? Where we're going out there and we're doing our job and we're protecting the community without fear or favor. And I don't want them to become this arm, for lack of a better phrase, of the Democratic Party. But like, for instance, I see they passed this budget last week and they set aside $250,000 to hire more female officers. And I'm like, frankly, I just don't give a shit. I just don't like, I mean, maybe you feel differently about that. I don't know why we're spending, in a police staffing crisis, $250,000 specifically trying to find more female police officers. Shouldn't they just find anyone who's qualified and willing to come?
Yeah, all we care about is merit.
Right? I'm just so over it.
I can care less about your race, gender, or your religion. I don't care. I don't even care what your politics are. Can we just get a quality human to do the job and let politicians do what they do, is the identity politic game, which I think is such a detriment to our society. Like, stop picking on cops. Stop trying to change the culture through identity politics. It's proven time and time again that is an absolute failure.
Let's end with this on a more positive note. You know, I think we all have to hope that someone does a good job, because or else what are we resigning ourselves to? So what do you need from Mayor Katie Wilson in order, what is your membership need in order to do their jobs effectively and keep the city safe?
Have the courage to stand up to the woke ideologues who want to completely civilianize law enforcement. Hmm. You're going to see, in my belief, if the people of the Herbolds of the world, if they get influence, which it's looking like they're getting influence, you're going to see the armed police force dwindle in the coming future. And you're going to see another financial grab to throw at civilians that I think, you know, they have certain roles, but when it comes to stepping up to criminality and intervening in evil, you need a strong police force that can act in a manner accordingly to protect the public. Stop blaming police and let us do our jobs. We've proven time and time again, even under all this immense scrutiny, and I call it majority of it unreasonable. Sure, we're not perfect, but we really have a good police force here. Stop coming after us. I mean, you've done so much harm to this profession, and look at our entire state. It just let us do our jobs. And at the end of the day, it comes down to the average community member. You got to get off the bench. Just because you don't like a candidate, you got to pick the lesser of both. And your power, your voice is your ballot. And if you're on the bench and you don't get involved, well, shame on you.
Hundreds of thousands of people who decided that this election was not worth participating in, and now they're going to get, you know, a socialist, for better or worse. Probably worse, my opinion, but I know that you need to be a little more diplomatic about that. So, all right, Mike Solon, president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild, we appreciate your time and best of luck to you and your officers.
You're the best, Brandy. Thank you.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, if officers left en masse over the threat of police defunding, what will they do when a mayor takes office who wants to abolish police? And she can say, oh, I've come away from that. To me, anyone who had that opinion, their judgment is so far gone, and I just can't trust them. So unless she comes in and she actually shows with her actions and her priorities that she doesn't hate the police, I'm going to continue to assume that she does. And so I think it's a concerning time for the city of Seattle and really King County at large. I mean, they have I'm not going to call him a socialist, but a uber progressive, let's say, in Girmay Zahalai, who just took over the King County executive's office. He didn't support abolition, but he did support the idea of defunding or divesting from police in 2020. So it's very concerning to me, and we'll be watching both of them very closely. All right, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, a few members of Congress from our state would not condemn socialism. To me, that suggests they support socialism. We'll have that. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. They will be down in Olympia advocating on your behalf this coming legislative session to make sure that they can stop any other horrible housing policies from taking effect. But in the meantime, you know, the laws aren't on your side. We just had rent control that was pushed through, and so you want to make sure that you have help in your corner navigating all the new rules and regulations and laws like rent control. So RHA can help you with that. So become a member, rhawa.org. And while you're at it, all of you are invited to RHA's 2025 Holiday Gala. They'll be having a celebration in Seattle December 13th. If you're interested in politics, housing policy, their parties are always very fun. And they said, Brandy, we want to make sure that all of your fans, we extend an invitation to invite them as well. So you can go to rhawa.org, rhawa.org to sign up to become a member and sign up to go to their 2025 Holiday Gala that's coming up. All right. Apparently, there are some things I thought, you know, we can all be on the same side, or at least the vast majority of people, in condemning the dangers of socialism and the dangers of communism. But not today in our political environment in America. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All right. So there was a resolution put forward to condemn the quote unquote horrors of socialism. Horrors of socialism. It says, whereas socialist ideology necessitates a concentration of power that has time and time again collapsed into communist regimes, totalitarian rule, and brutal dictatorships, whereas the United States was founded on the belief in the sanctity of the individual, to which the collective system of socialism in all its forms is fundamentally and necessarily opposed, now therefore be it resolved by the House of Representatives that Congress denounces socialism in all its forms and opposes the implementation of socialist policies in the United States. Well, that should be an easy one for any sane Democrat to vote in favor of. Not so much. In fact, more Democrats voted against this than voted for it. So Republicans, 199 in favor of it, 20 were not there to vote or chose not to vote. Democrats, 86 in favor, 98 opposed, and then 27 decided that they weren't going to vote on it. And look, let me just say for the record that I understand that some of these things are put forth just to make some sort of political point that puts one side on the record on something so you can go back and say, look how evil they are. I understand that that's done. But like, for instance, there was the resolution put forth to condemn Charlie Kirk's murder. And that was Republicans trying to put Democrats on the record. And then Democrats, they thought, you know, some of them were like, well, I don't want to side with, look as if I'm sympathetic toward Charlie Kirk or whatever it is. I think it's kind of a different situation. But for any reasonable Democrat, you should be able to say, if you're a Democrat, socialism is different, right? It's supposed to be. That's a totally different political party and political movement. So you should be able to condemn it if you don't believe in it, right? Well, if you're a Washington State Democrat, becomes a little tricky for you, right? So several members of our, so we have 10 members of Congress from our state. 8 of them are Democrats. 2 of them are Republicans. Obviously, 2 Republicans condemned it. But for the other Democrats, only 3 of them voted to condemn socialism. Only 3 of them. It was Marie Glusenkamp Perez in the 3rd, Congresswoman Kim Schreier in the 8th, Marilyn Strickland in the 10th. And then I think this graphic is wrong, Nicole, because it was Smith, Larson, and DelBene decided that they weren't going to vote for it. Is that correct? Nicole's shaking no. They decided that they were going to abstain. They didn't vote at all.
Smith voted no.
He voted no?
Yes.
Oh, I thought he's voted that he was abstaining
no.
from the vote. Double check that.
No. Other representatives, Smith and Jayapal,
voted against it.
Oh,
they did. Okay.
Yes.
I thought it said in there earlier that he voted against it. So DelBene and Larson decided they weren't going to vote.
Did not vote.
And then Jayapal and Smith, I'm kind of surprised by Smith there.
I know.
Because he's one of the more reasonable Democrats. And so he voted that he wasn't going to condemn socialism.
He said it was misleading and oversweeping.
God. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? And now we have a socialist. Maybe he's worried because he's got the socialist running against him. What the hell is her name? Why can't I not even remember her name? Shama Sawant. She's running against him as a socialist for his seat in Congress. So maybe he doesn't. But he has no chance of losing
wow.
to her.
I really didn't even think about that.
He
so
has
maybe,
no chance of losing
why
to her.
Why would you not? Wow. I didn't even think about that.
But he has no chance of losing to her. Absolutely none. So you don't have to placate. I don't know why he's placating the left here. But then wow. Del Bene and Larson are like, I'm just not going to weigh in on that one.
Yeah.
I get that one out. That some of these are for show, but it should be very easy. Do you believe in socialism? Well, no. Okay, let's just vote yes on it, okay? It doesn't work. It's never worked. It's never going to work. So I think that's interesting. On the record, Smith says, well, not so much about socialism. We'll have to ask him why. I mean, he's come on the show before. So very interesting, quite interesting, as socialism sweeps the country. And it's the Democrats should be running from this. Absolutely should be running from it, should be distancing themselves from Donnie and Katie Wilson and from the whole movement, because it only chips away at their party. It only chips away. It only takes votes from them. People voting for socialists are not taking votes from Republicans. They're not taking votes from Republicans. So you're going to basically see your party replaced in blue district by blue district with Democratic socialists, which are just socialists trying to make themselves palatable to a wider voting audience. And they're going to do that. And then you're going to lose tried and true members of the Democratic Party, because one thing that I will say is Shama Sawant, as an example, socialist, was a city council member in Seattle for a long time. Now, as I said, running to replace Congressman Adam Smith or running against him. She is way harder on Democrats than she is on Republicans. Look at her social media feeds. Socialists are aggressive toward Democrats because they see them basically as traitors and as not true progressives. And so to support socialism and socialist candidates and align yourselves with them, they're not all of a sudden going to be buddy-buddy with you. They're still going to try to take you out and take your seat. So it's just stupid. All right. Speaking of, coming up in National, we'll talk about Mamdani's visit to the White House. We didn't get a chance to cover it on the show last week because it happened after our final show, but it was quite interesting indeed. First, if you're concerned about the AI bubble, the impact that that might have on your retirement portfolio, I think that's perfectly reasonable thing to be concerned about. Reach out to our friend Zach Abraham at knowyourriskpodcast.com. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. Zach can walk you through, first of all, what impact AI will have on your retirement portfolio, do a preview for 2026, talk about how critical Bulwark's deployment of value investing is to retirement portfolios, and he'll give you a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So schedule your free Know Your Risk Portfolio review and subscribe to Zach's daily market recap at KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. That's KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. All right, in some national news. So after our final show of the week last week, we knew Mamdani was heading to the White House to see President Donald Trump. I loved how the internet just melted down about this. The right and the left were both melting down after it because neither side felt like their person was sufficiently mean to the other person. But even Trump said beforehand, I expect this to be a pleasant meeting. And why? I mean, let's play some clips and then I'll give my thoughts on why I think both of them acted the way they did. So this was a really interesting moment. Trump was asked about, okay, you know, he's a New York guy. Would he feel like he would need to flee New York City under a Mamdani mayorship?
Would you feel comfortable living in New York City under a Mamdani administration?
Yeah, I would. I really would. Especially after the meeting. Absolutely.
Now, I think that's crazy. I think maybe he could have been a little harder on that. Like, we'll see, you know, so I'll talk about that in a moment. And then, of course, Mamdani has called Trump all manner of crazy things, like a fascist. And so he was asked to his face while Trump is sitting there whether he still thinks Trump is a fascist.
Are you affirming that you think President Trump is a fascist?
I've spoken about...
That's okay. You can just say yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's easier. It's easier than explaining it. I don't mind.
Yeah, I thought that was a very funny, endearing moment. Now, I don't know what their conversation was like behind the scenes, but there are some moments in there where I think President Trump probably could have been a little more hard and said, yeah, we'll see how it goes. You know, if he's committed to X, Y, and Z, then maybe I'd feel comfortable living in New York. But some of the things that he's come out and said he supports, you know, obviously that's not going to be good for New Yorkers. So I do think that President Trump could have been a little less polite in the moment. I did think it was interesting that Mamdani, you know, he's been like full-blown TDS times a million. And then in front of the president, he's very deferential and polite. And then he goes on CNN and immediately is back to his old ways.
Mr. Mayor-elect, just to be very clear, do you think that President Trump is a fascist?
And after President Trump said that, I said yes. And
so you do?
Not really.
And that's something that I've said in the past. Yeah. I say it today. And I think what I appreciated about the conversation that I had with the president was that we were not shy about the places of disagreement about the politics that has brought us to this moment. And we also wanted to focus on what it could look like to deliver on a shared analysis of an affordability crisis for New Yorkers.
You've also said in the past that President Trump has engaged in a, quote, attack on our democracy. You've called him a despot. Do you still believe President Trump is a threat to the democracy?
Everything that I've said in the past, I continue to believe. And that's the thing that I think is important in our politics, is that we don't shy away from where we have disagreements, but we understand what it is that brings us to that table. Because I'm not coming into the Oval Office to make a point or make a stand. I'm coming in there to deliver for New Yorkers. And a few weeks ago, I was asked by a reporter three words to describe myself. I said, New York City. And that's what animated that conversation. How do we deliver for the people of New York City?
So a part of me doesn't hate that. A part of me doesn't hate that, where he says, yeah, I do believe he's a fascist. And he did kind of acknowledge, like, he didn't deny that in the moment with Trump. He was trying to skirt around it, and Trump just gave him a nice out. Like, it's okay. You can just agree and move on, because we all know that you feel that way. And so for him to say, like, yeah, I still feel that way about Donald Trump, but I'm not going to the White House to make a point or throw a fit for my supporters and socialists. I'm going there to see if the president and I, there are some areas of agreement. Part of me doesn't hate that. Part of me doesn't hate that. And when I watch the left freaking out on Mamdani for not being meaner to Trump, and the right freaking out on Trump for not being meaner to Mamdani, I thought maybe these are just two people who decided to have an adult conversation in the best interests of the American people and of New Yorkers, maybe exchange some words behind the scenes. But maybe this is, because it kind of is like how politics used to be a little bit, where it's like we have disagreements, but we're trying to put forward a front that's a little less divisive. Trump's just not one to engage in that very often. And so I thought, well, maybe he could have been a little harsher, but maybe we're just used to, in the Trump area, things being so harsh and confrontational and all of that. So I think it was kind of nice. Obviously, Trump doesn't believe in socialism. Obviously, he has concerns about Mamdani's ideas for New York City. Obviously, Mamdani thinks very little of President Donald Trump. But isn't it kind of nice they can stand in a room and have like a pleasant, at least, conversation and talk with the media?
It is. It's kind of a reminder, well, the rhetoric that people use. And like you've said before, if you're going to say he's a fascist and he's this dictator,
yes,
and compare him to Hitler, people think that they need to go kill Hitler.
Right.
He's standing right in front of him. He's not killing him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of that comparative thing. Stop calling him Hitler. You obviously don't think he's Hitler if you're standing right next to him.
Or you wouldn't take a meeting with him.
Right. So stop comparing him to that person if you can stand right next to him and have a conversation with him.
Yeah, and if you enjoyed the conversation you had, you were able to exchange ideas and stuff, clearly he's not a threat to democracy. So I understand him revisiting those fascist, threat to democracy, despot phrases days after the meeting is disingenuous in the sense that you met him. You engage in a conversation with him.
You laughed at him.
Yeah, you laughed. You took pictures with him.
Yeah.
Like, he's clearly not. And I think part of that is a strategy of Donald Trump. It's like, let's have pictures of us, you know, together and doing this. So there's strategy on both sides. I didn't need Donald Trump to go into that meeting and yell at Mamdani about socialism and free crap and all of that.
Prove something. Correct.
It's right? I think they both were able to take kind of a win away from that. I thought Mamdani made himself appear, for as little as experience as he has, for this like washed up wannabe rapper who's younger than I am, who's now the mayor of the largest city in America. I thought he looked mature. And
I mean, he looked like a little kid in the White House.
Right, but I thought that he held his own in the moment and was professional and mature, and maybe that's something that we needed to see from him. I still think he's going to run New York City into the ground.
Yeah.
But, he can go there and have a reasonable conversation with the president. My panties weren't in a bunch over it.
No.
The internet's panties were in a bunch, and I was just like, that's nice. Good for you. Now let's and see.
Yeah, it gives me a little bit of hope that he can, like, at least act like an adult in a situation.
Yes. Can you act like an adult, not scream and whine and all that stuff? So, all right. Depressing. I did send out our daily show poll. So if you're a subscriber, you have an opportunity to take that quick before we get to it. This is just sad. So happy for Denver. Happy for folks in Colorado. Cheapest gas prices in Denver hit less than $2 ahead of Thanksgiving weekend travel. Less than, it finally happened. $1.94 per gallon in Denver. says gas prices in Denver are trending down just in time for the busy Thanksgiving travel weekend, with one station in the city even heading less than $2 on Sunday. Just in the last week, gas prices in Denver have fallen 14.5 cents per gallon, hitting a $2.47 per gallon average on Monday morning. So that's the average across the city. That number is lower than the national average of $3.03 per gallon and is even nearly 30 cents lower than Denver's average prices a year ago. And we know nationwide on the whole, gas prices have been trending down under President Donald Trump. Where are they in Washington, though? Got to be in that like $2, some $3 range. No, of course not. We still have some of the highest gas prices in the nation. $4.18 on average today in the state of Washington. We are third just behind California and Hawaii. So gas prices are still very high here. And the reason I want to highlight this is Colorado's a blue state. Colorado is a blue state, so high gas prices do not have to be a red state, blue state issue. We're used to them being lower in red states than blue states because of issues around taxation and regulation. But this really shows that Washington state and states that have implemented Hawaii, I feel like you got to kind of Hawaii and Alaska, you got to kind of set them aside because they're like so hard to get anything to, right? And so they're on literally like an island of their own in terms of this issue. But when you look at states like Washington and California that are regulating carbon emissions, et cetera, and have these climate auctions, carbon auctions, we're really on our own when it comes to the world of gas pricing. And it doesn't, you cannot blame it singularly on Democrats, because there are states run by Democrats where gas prices are very reasonable. But in Washington state, the combination of our insane gas taxes, which just went up 6 cents a gallon, and then the Carbon Climate Commitment Act, which is going to continue to raise gas prices. It's designed to do that. We've talked about it a million times. If any of your friends and family over the Thanksgiving table are wondering, why is gas so expensive here? You walk them through it. We have a high gas tax here, and then we have the Climate Commitment Act, where you have to buy, where polluters have to buy credits at auction. And then as the years go by, fewer and fewer credits are available. So the cost of those credits, there's more competition for them. So the cost of them skyrockets, and they pass that along to you at the gas pump. So we're only going to see this get worse and worse and worse unless the voters, I don't know, have another opportunity to repeal the Climate Commitment Act, or if we get a governor who can take some steps on their own to be able to limit the impact of those carbon auctions. Jay Inslee, I hope you're happy with yourself, though. $1.94 in Denver. And more than like $4.30, and some places almost $5 per gallon in the Seattle metro, because $4.18 is the average across the entire state. So we have some areas that are hovering around $5. Well, in Denver, I would love to see the one. That's like, oh, it's like a dragon or a unicorn at this point, seeing a one on the front of a gallon of gas. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, will gas prices impact your holiday travel plans? Yes or no? I'm not traveling anywhere. That's not true. I am traveling over the Christmas holiday, but I'm not driving. And I don't often think about the cost of airplane fuel when I fly somewhere. But what about you, Nicole? Yes or no?
Yeah, I'm not going anywhere either.
Maybe that's
for those holidays. So I guess I'm saying no because of that. And I think that's what a lot of people are doing. They're staying close anyway. But I do think it affects just the travel that you do around here. I know I try to, lump trips, do one big errand trip instead of multiple trips. Or, this weekend I was debating going up to Blaine and I was like,
Yeah.
I mean, there are just things that are unnecessary expenses.
Is it worth the cost? Let's see. Bolt Up says no effect at all. We're hosting, so I'm not going anywhere. You just have to foot the bill for a bunch of the food. So Nancy says I have a Tesla. So no, not for me. Let's see. Joe, thankfully, getting out of Washington is the answer. Gas is cheaper everywhere else except for here, thanks to the libtards. Interesting that dim-witted Jay Inslee moved to Idaho as soon as he was out of office. That's a good point, though, because if you're going to Idaho or somewhere, just wait to gas up till you get out. And that actually will make your driving cheaper. Yes. So just wait till you get to Idaho.
I only put enough gas in my car to get to the Arlington exit, which is where gas is cheapest in the state.
Arlington exit. That is the cheapest. You checked. State. Nicole, now that they're going to have a bunch of people
there. I mean,
there,
it's already it's already an issue.
Yeah.
The lines are crazy.
Yeah. Kathleen says, I moved to Idaho in October. Love the lower gas and food prices. So sorry for Washington State. Don't know when or if Washington State residents will ever vote for common sense candidates. Yeah. When or if, I have no idea. Let's see here. Aztec Sun God. I answered yes, because when I fill up my tank, I'll be pissed off, and then I'll be pissed off when I'm on the road. So it'll change your holiday travel plans in the sense that you'll be angry.
Right.
You were going to be happy. And now I'm telling you, like, it's almost angry. $90 to fill up my tank. And that is just insane. Because there was a point when I got that car, I can remember it being 60 something or maybe $70 to fill up the tank. So it's like $20, $25 added per tank of gas. And that's the kind of stuff you start to notice. So Papa Woody said yes, and it'll impact shopping. We can do in my family. We'll just eat and hang out. No gifts. Yeah, Mike and I don't do gifts anyway. So that's kind of a nice, and we don't have kids. So that's kind of a nice thing to take out of the stress of the holidays, is trying to having to buy people a bunch of crap that they're probably never going to use again and didn't want in the first place. Let's see. Let's meet one more. Thomas says, I buy gas in Idaho. Julie, I wasn't planning on traveling, so thankfully it doesn't affect me for the holidays. Hey, stay home. No big deal. It's a beautiful place to spend the holidays if you get out of Seattle and, you know, the drug rattled, riddled areas. Okay, we'll get to comments from the live stream coming up next. First, our wonderful advertisers at Valentine Roofing have just been awarded for the third year in a row the best roofing company in the Pacific Northwest. And it's because they do more than just roofing. They can do custom holiday lighting. I think it's a great time of the year if you want that done. I watched my neighbors struggling to put up, you know, it's such a marital test. I watched my neighbors, husband and wife, helping, you know, she was helping him untangle the lights and he was trying to get them spaced just right. And I even told him, I was like, call our sponsors at Valentine Roofing. They'll do that for you. No marital strife required. They do more than that, too. If you need gutters cleaned or installed, attic insulation, even exterior cleaning, they can help you with all of that. But of course, the big thing they do is roofing. So if your roof can be repaired, they won't try to push you into a new roof. They'll come in, they'll repair it. But if you do need a new roof, you can rest assured that your new roof will have a lifetime warranty. And with flexible financing options, including zero down and 0% interest, taking care of your home has never been easier. So reach out to our friends at Valentine Roofing. The company's mission, to serve and care for our neighbors with the purpose of creating a long-lasting impact and peace of mind. Love it. Call 206 Roofing for your free estimate today. 206 Roofing. All right, comments from the live stream. B. Larson on the Girls Speaking Out over the weekend. Why aren't we hearing from the trans boy athletes complaining about discrimination because they can't make the team? I don't know if there's any. I mean, we had a trans athlete on the show, just kind of explaining why he played on the girls' team, because he'd done that for years ever since he was really young. But yeah, it is interesting that the other side isn't propping up. So like, they've got these like older people out, you know, teachers, etc., saying that this is transphobic and discriminatory, but they don't have any of the trans athletes speaking up for themselves saying, hey, this is why I need to play on the girls team or need to compete with the girls. Big Princess, these brave young women are the best thing about what the future holds for the next generation. I agree. Marcy Ringo, so disappointing that teachers were there to protest. I agree, because then you are taking a side. I think that's part of the message that Annalie and Francis had, is who's standing up for us? And if you're a teacher, frankly, you shouldn't take a side on this specific issue. So then you're saying that you are firmly on the side of the boys who want to compete with girls, and that means you're standing against the girls. Is that the right thing to do as a teacher? I think you just mind your own business. Papa Woody, the dig here is the push between psychology and reality. You can tell the same lie 1,000 times and it never gets any more true. I agree. On Scott Pressler coming to Washington State saying he thinks this is a place worth fighting for, so you should too. Diana Manning, in the state of Washington, it is illegal. Oh, this is about teacher strike. Sorry. Let me get back to that one. Little Miss J, Brandy, we need a hair review. That's also about, wait, is that Scott? Yeah. Brandy, we need a hair review now too. Curious minds want to know. Oh, about Scott's hair. Beautiful hair.
So beautiful.
It's like down to his belly button.
I'm actually surprised he washes it every day, he said.
Yeah, he said he washes it every day. I don't even wash my hair every day. Mm-hmm. I didn't wash it this morning. Now, We'll take a shower, but I'm not going to wash my whole hair. You know how long it takes to blow dry this mane? Baron of Gray Matter, where do I sign up to help Scott? I'm ready to go. I'm not gutless. Can you find Scott's website for us so we can we can pitch that quick? Let's see here. On the teachers, maybe seeing consequences for their striking. I'll go back to that Diana Manning one. In the state of Washington, it is illegal for teachers to strike. Wherever they actually take the union to court, the judge has always found that public employees can't strike. Yeah, and I should note that. It's illegal for public teachers to strike in Washington, but they do it anyway. There's never any consequences for them because the Democrats allow them to do it.
And that's why this is exciting, I thought, because maybe this will encourage now to have some consequences.
But
maybe this will encourage other schools. Hey, yeah, let's take away some of these perks of illegal striking.
Let's show them how replaceable they are, right? Let's have some people ready to replace them if they walk off the job in the middle of the year. And that's so disrespectful to your students to do that after their holiday break, right when they're supposed to come back, start the second half of the year, for you to go on strike. That is so disrespectful to your students.
And that now they've got to go to school all through June and July. Right. And that's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Scott's website is earlyvoteaction.com.
Earlyvoteaction.com if you want to sign up to help Scott with his efforts. Or not. Yeah, Scott Presser. I was like, what is going on? I can't think today. I didn't sleep well last night. let's see. Lynn Blevins. Teachers always have to work so many days per year. So do they miss any pay for striking? Wouldn't unemployment just have them make more money in a year? Always have to work so many days. Yeah, so they have, in their contract, they have to work a certain number of days, right? And this is a good point. Wait a second. Lynn, you just made me think of something. So the teachers have to make up those days anyway, because if school's missed, there's going to be more days.
They'll just have them sit in the classroom.
Paid, but they get paid for the same. They're going to get paid for that number of days no matter what. You know what? You see what Lynn is saying? So then unemployment, you're just paying them on top of the money that they're going to get. That is such a good point. And I have to ask somebody about that. Because let's say they miss a week and you tack a week onto the end of the school year. Well, they're getting paid for that week at the end of the school year. So they're always going to make up those days. That is such a good point. First time, Lynn, I'm ever thinking about that. Well, they're just going to make more money.
Typically, the way that they're pay works is that they spread it throughout the year anyway, so they don't get pay for just how many weeks or days they work in a month. They get it's like spread out between the like the 12 months or whatever. And so I don't know how that's gonna work.
Very interesting. I don't know. That's a good question for me to ask.
Good question.
All right. On socialism in Seattle and what's happening with the police union. Old Sub Sailor, she just said she's not accepting bodyguards and government transportation. Is that true? I don't know that she can reject them. I think the city has an obligation. Like, if you're the governor, you can't just opt out of your state patrol security detail. I didn't see that, Old Sub Sailor, so tell me where you saw that. Klein Rhonda, I feel for the police officers in Washington State. The leaders we have in Washington are driving police officers away, and it's very sad because the people in Washington are going to be in a world of hurt. There will not be enough officers to protect the ones that need protection. And for the record, I do think Katie Wilson should have an SPD security detail. Is it incredibly hypocritical? Yes. Would I like her to say she doesn't want it? Yes. But I do believe there are crazy people out there. And I think that it's protecting voters and protecting democracy when you protect her. And so I might not like the results of the election, but we have to respect the results of the election. And we need to make sure that she's safe. That's just the bottom line. And I'll point out the hypocrisy of it every step of the way. Mm-hmm. All right. On only a couple Washington Democrats thinking socialism is bad. Papa Woody, Jayapal needs a holiday in Cambodia. Yeah. Eric says, no surprise from Adam Smith. He's a typical Democrat. I disagree. He's much more reasonable than a typical Democrat. I don't think he supports socialism. So he just must have found it to be sort of a virtue signaling type thing on the Republican side. I don't know. Matthew Cook, it's hard to condemn something that you support and is more and more becoming the Dem Party platform. Yeah. Kay Taun, if you want to know who controls somebody, look who they can't criticize. For the left, the radical socialists in their party. Yeah, they definitely don't criticize the far left as much. And so that must mean that they worry about electoral consequences if they do so. On Trump and Mamdani's meeting, let's see, Crafty Grandma Crispy, you can clearly see Mamdani is confused by Trump's actions. Trump is the alpha. Well, Trump is definitely the alpha in that situation. I think that's fair to say. White Castle. Trump likes to start with a friendly carrot before pulling out the stick. It's just his style.
I don't like the way that he said, yeah, absolutely, I feel comfortable.
I agree with that, because I do think you have to, you can't just dismiss and the dangerous ideas.
Especially having as much money as he has, yeah. And Mandami saying, right. I'm going to tax all of you rich people. I mean,
yes.
Yeah,
I have to agree. All right, good comments per the usual. Thank you, Nicole. I'll look into the Katie Wilson thing. I didn't see. Did you check her ex?
I just looked. Yeah, no, I don't see anything.
She didn't say anything. So maybe it was in a press release I just missed while we were around. Getting ready for the show today. So we'll continue to check on that. But I really don't believe she can opt out of it. I could be wrong, but I believe that they have to protect her at certain things, whether she likes it or not. All right. I have encouraged you to take, for a couple of years now, to take the First Mark challenge to move your insurance over to First Mark. Why? Because they're going to get you the best possible insurance you can have at the best possible price. And that's really all that you can hope for. And in some cases, like in Christine's case, a wonderful undivided subscriber, they saved her $10,000 a year. She'd been listening, I've been nagging about it, and she finally did it, $10,000 a year. Now, she didn't have a choice because her carrier was about to dissolve, and she panicked, and she said she finally called up First Mark, told him what was happening, and said, my situation is complicated. She's like, I got two businesses, I got a house, we're about to add a third vehicle, my carrier is dissolving, what do I do? Well, you just take a deep breath, and you let First Mark Insurance do it for you. FirstMarkInsurance.com, they went out, they found, chopped their market of carriers, came back and said, great news, we can cover everything you've got, and we can save you $10,000 in the process. She said her old broker was blown away. The one that she left to do business with First Mark, he was like, wow, I did a pretty good job. He was very impressed with what First Mark put together. So take the First Mark challenge today, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they always have your best interest in mind. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. So this is interesting. So Congressman Eric Swalwell, who's just annoying, isn't that the one that slept with a Chinese spy? Yeah. He's announced that he's running for governor of California. And maybe that's because why can't I think of the other Katie's name? Katie Porter. Maybe that's because her chances have just been tanking. And so they decided to get another Democrat in there. So he's running for governor of California. And if you are angry about vote by mail, wait till you hear about Eric Swalwell's plans for voting in California.
I want us to be able to vote by phone. I think every Californian
vote by phone.
Yeah. If we can do our taxes, do our, you know, our, make our healthcare appointments, you know, make essentially do your banking online, you should be able to vote by phone.
What?
Make it safe, make it secure, but it's actually already happening all over the United States. I want us to be a blue state that doesn't do just a little bit better than like Georgia or Alabama when it comes to like voting access. I want us to max out democracy. Also, as it relates to democracy, if you wait in line for 30 minutes or more, if you do want to vote in person, I think you should fine every county for every minute that a person has to wait longer. We have to be better, not just a little bit better than the other states. The DMV. I don't think Californians should have to go in person to the DMV anymore. I think we can do that virtually. I think you can have the DMV employees do it virtually, but that's a lot of real estate.
Is that the most popular position?
Digitize the DMV.
Today, yeah.
We can modernize the state. And I look forward to, you know, bringing these ideas to Californians.
Yeah, interesting. I look forward to you bringing those ideas to Californians too. I love how he said, if we can do this, like a quote, if we can do banking online, we can vote by phone. What are you talking about? This is going to be glorious. I don't know. Maybe he might give Katie Porter a run for her money on insanity. We'll see. We'll add it up at the end of 2026. How many more, who had more clips that played insanity check? Katie Porter or Eric Swalwell? I think we're one for one right now. All right, that has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. And remember, a little housekeeping. We won't have a Thursday show, obviously, but we will be here tomorrow and Wednesday. So you can maybe turn on the show while you're prepping your turkey on Wednesday or something like that. I don't know. If you'd like to become a subscriber, sign up, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Just click on the banner that says support the show. You can catch the interview we just did with Scott Pressler and all our other wonderful content and participate in our daily show polls. Undividedpod.com. We'll see you back here, same time, same place, tomorrow at noon Pacific time.